back to Tim Westerhaus and having Melissa here and creating this concert about 100 years of women's suffrage.
Yeah, so this concert was conceived both as a historical celebration of an event in the movement that led to it, and also a acknowledgement of the work that continued on and that not everyone received that right to vote in 1920, August 18th, 1920, ratified mm-hmm. by Tennessee. And so the concert reflects that with both like a part one historical snapshot. So I got to put on my musicological cap and dig through the Library of Congress. They have an outstanding page devoted to music from the suffrage movement, cartoons, speeches. And you see them in these beautiful old scores with the, you know, picture cartoon artwork on the front. But they also have the anti-suffrage music as well. And man, it is scathing as the pro-suffrage music is uplifting. And so we, in this concert, actually dramatize that. We have our sopranos and altos who they've been working busily creating suffrage sashes and placards and, you know, getting their yellow suffrage roses and singing music, the suffrage song by Eleanor Smith. From the British Suffrage Association, Ethel Smyth, the March of the Women, which she famously conducted in a prison with a toothbrush, being imprisoned through the movement. The tenors and basses, though, and it's hard for them. They have to sing texts that they don't believe in. Mind the baby, I must vote today. You know, making fun of, you know, the woman who is going off to vote while the husband has to, you know, step down and take care of the kids at home. I mean, it's
this
just
work that's beneath
ridiculous.
Him.
So our audience is going to be encouraged to boo and hiss at them during that portion until they're quickly converted around and see the light. That side will end with a non-historical piece, but a commission by Radiolab of Dolly Parton's 19th Amendment. So we're going to jump to the future as well. But then in the second part, we shift to modern voices, and that includes Melissa's voice through several of her compositions. Music that highlights a broader question of what are we called to do today? But from both the perspective of our sopranos and altos, those who identify as women, but also a conversation that to me seems like it's lacking often is what responsibility, what action is required of those who identify as men today, you know, whether it's the Me Too movement or whatnot. And I think that that's been lacking because it's a hard question. What is our role?
It is.
And so we've included several pieces from that perspective as well. One of the pieces, though, returning to the sopranos and altos, that they have loved of Melissa's is a piece called Wild Embers. And maybe, Melissa, you could just share a little bit about this piece that all of our Discantus treble choir and our concert choir, sopranos and altos, will be singing together.
So I discovered a young poet on the internet. Her name is Nikita Gill, and she is a British Indian poet. And she publishes her poetry, or she initially published her poetry on Tumblr and Instagram, which is a thing that a lot of young women poets started doing a few years ago. You know, poetry is an art form that's also been institutionalized, much like music. And there is a history in poetry of men being given opportunities and women's poetry being dismissed as less than or too emotional or not intellectual enough or, you know, all sorts of things which I very strongly believe are not true and is not the point of poetry, actually. Nikita Gill and a number of other poets, Ruby Paul, Amanda Lovelace is another one, were publishing their poetry on their own terms on the internet and just freely making it available. And what happened is a lot of young women connected with this poetry, of course, because it was their voice and their thoughts and their emotions that were being reflected back, which is something that you're not likely to get from an establishment white male poet, you know. So they got very popular. And then there was a pushback from the establishment who said, this work isn't real poetry. It's not intellectual enough. It's too emotional. All the same arguments we've been hearing for hundreds of years against women's poetry. But because of the internet and the sort of democratizing power of internet publicity, these women were able to segue into a poetry career, and many of them have published poetry collections now. So Nikita wrote a poem called Wild Embers when she had a collection of poetry of the same name, Wild Embers, published. And I loved the text so much. We are the descendants of the wild women you forgot. We are the stories you thought would never be taught. It really speaks to me as a woman composer, because I often lament the women who would have made wonderful composers, but whose voices we lost because society discouraged them from composing. Think of Mozart's sister, Nanne Erl, right? She was apparently, she was older than Mozart by a couple of years, a wonderful pianist, started composing. And when Mozart came along and was equally talented, Leopold, their father, focused on Mozart. And Nanne Erl was told, it's not seemly for you to be a child prodigy touring Europe as a girl. What would have happened if Nanne Erl had been allowed to compose? What voice did we lose when she was discouraged from doing that and she became a, you know, a wife and a mother who wasn't allowed to have that creative outlet? So that's, yeah, what this text really means to me.
On our way into hearing it, circle back around to saying a few words of the paraphrase of the text again, so it's right in our ears right now.
We are the descendants of the wild women you forgot. We are the stories you thought would never be taught. They should have checked the ashes of the women they burnt alive, because it only takes a single wild ember to bring a whole wildfire to life.
Been hearing Wild Embers by our guest, Melissa Dunphy. And even as it was going on, there was a lovely conversation having to do with the range of expressive possibilities and And what a choir could do. And so talk a little bit more about your experiences with your child you birthed and now there at South Air.
Right. Oh, I thank you so much for saying that, because I do actually think of my compositions in some ways as children that you send out into the world and you can't really control what happens with them. But I love that. You know, I don't want to control. I'm not the kind of composer who's very prescriptivist and very, you know, it has to be sung the way it is in my head. I conceived of Wild Embers as a folk song, you know, a folk protest song. You may have heard some sort of percussive elements that were in the song just now. There's a stomp and a thigh slap, and then the women sing, shh, this kind of sound on top. And I, in my head, that's literally from a drum kit, the kick, snare, hi-hat, you know, in this three-beat rhythm, very, very simple percussion, but also imitating the idea of a march that's happening with these women who are standing up and having their voices heard. But, you know, when you send a folk song out into the world, every folk song you've ever heard gets done a million different ways. You know, think of all the ways that Bob Dylan's songs are covered as rock songs or as, you know, singer-songwriter songs as they were conceived, or in choirs or as sad songs or as piano ballads, or, you know, that's what a folk song does. So the way this choir sang the piece is this joyful way of interpreting it, which I love. When I originally put it on the page, though, I don't think that that's what I wrote on the page. But I love that they took it that way. It's amazing.
I'm laughing because as you asked that question, Vern, about, you know, the giving birth kind of, you know, thing, I also feel like a little bit it's far safer for me as a conductor to bring live a work of Bach or Handel, because they're not going to tap me on the shoulder and say, it really should have been this way, and that ornamentation is over the top, Westerhaus, which probably would have happened. And so I recognize...
in the yes,
and even... yes. So even I recognize my own inner, you know, critic. It's also like, well, is that okay? And having had just a very different experience with Carey Boyce and the premiere of A Garden of Roses, where he's in the ensemble, he's there every week, so being far more comfortable. But it's just this wonderful, joyous experience. I feel like I have yet to have an experience with a composer that's been one where it's one of dissatisfaction. It's just of joyful discovery of what truly caring and passionate artists, musicians bring alive with a work. Our singers, they are 18 to 22 years old, and they're on a college campus. They're having lots of things that are, you know, struggles in their lives, and they have dreams and passions for the future. And to see that passion and intensity come alive through this piece, that's what's really gratifying, and to just see that synergy come together.
And this is, again, if you're just joining us, this has to do with the concert tomorrow night, 7:30, at the Myrtle Woldson Performing Arts Center, that new performing arts center on the southwest corner of Gonzaga University. And there will be a pre-concert conversation with Melissa Dunphy, who's giving us a pretty wonderful pre-concert conversation right now. And again, the complete title, The 19th For Her, For All, Celebrating 100 Years of Women's Suffrage. So another Melissa piece. Let's
yeah,
get into that.
I was in the Ordway Performing Arts Center in St. Paul with my parents. My Christmas gift to them was taking them to the concert of Cantus, the professional all-male ensemble. And I had already had this next piece programmed on our repertoire, it was soon to be programmed, hearing this tenor bass version of this incredible piece called It's Strange About Stars, and not Christmas themed by any means, but definitely fit into their program of storytelling. And in a conversation with Melissa, I think within a few days after that, we were starting to talk about pieces. I'm like, wait, no, I know that piece. I heard it literally a few days ago, really taken by the poetry, and just recently released in a four-part harmony version. So recent, in fact, that Melissa was sharing yesterday.
Oh, that's a survival plan?
A survival plan of sorts.
Yes, but Strange About Stars was originally, I wrote it by myself, which is actually something that is quite unusual for working composers to write a piece just because you want to write a piece. You know, normally, I don't want to toot my own horn too much here, but you get, I have a full card of commissions on my schedule. And so I'm always working on commissions. But a few years ago, I was still getting my PhD and I had a break in my schedule. Mm-hmm. And, you know, getting grad school is tough. Anyone who's ever been to grad school knows it has its ups and downs. And I had been in kind of a down spell. I had gone through a depression. You know, I had been to therapy and on medication, and I felt creatively stymied. Writer's block, I guess, you know. And I decided to put aside my dissertation work and the very academic work I was doing and just write an a cappella treble choir piece. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, spent a few days looking at poetry, and I discovered for the first time for me this poet named Lola Ridge, who is a poet that, you know, wasn't on my radar. Now I see her everywhere because, you know, it's that thing where you find something and you see it everywhere after that. She was born in Ireland. As a young child, her mother moved her to New Zealand, so she was raised mostly in New Zealand. Then when she was 18, she went to college in Sydney, Australia, where I also went to college for a hot minute, and then came to America in her 30s, her early 30s, and only then did she start writing poetry. She was in New York City in the early 20th century. There were, you know, ghettos and poor Jewish neighborhoods that she lived in and poor Black neighborhoods. And she wrote poetry about social justice and the things she was seeing around her. And I saw my own story. As you can probably hear, I am not a native Philadelphian from my accent. I grew up in Australia. And I came to America when I was 23, and I only started composing when I was in my mid-20s, which for classical music is really late. You know, classical music has a youth obsession and a child prodigy obsession. So mid-20s is a really late age to start composing. Mm-hmm. But I started composing about what I was seeing around me, the politics and the social justice issues. So I was like, oh, this is a woman that's tread this path before in a different discipline. And this poem, It's Strange About Stars, it's such a beautiful lyrical poem, but I read something in between the lines, a kind of a trauma that happened that she's survived. So I dedicated this song to all the survivors. And you know, it's not overt. There's nothing really on the page that tells you that something has happened. But something has happened. And that, to me, is the story of so many women who are so put together and so accomplished and, you know, such survivors. And then, you know, you scratch a little beneath the surface and you see some of the pain and some of the things that they've had to deal with in their lives. And that's what so many women do. And I thought that was just, you know, a really powerful thing. And when I set the piece, it was the first piece that I had written in months that I was happy with, that I loved my own music again, you know. So then Cantus called me up and said, can we do this piece for an all-male ensemble? And, you know, I think that that's wonderful. Again, it's that thing of putting a child out into the world and seeing where it goes, right? I didn't conceive of it as an all-male thing, but Cantus took it and applied it to the story of the little match girl. And it worked so well. I love that can happen with something you create, that it gets recontextualized. Like, that's really special to me. I know some composers hate it. I love it.
So we're on our way to the children's chorus version of it. Again, you want to kind of, as we go into it, remind us a bit about a few things about the text.
So It's Strange About Stars. What is the next line? You have to be, it's about what looking up at the stars from the ground and being still when they shine at you. And it talks about the rays of the stars don't hurt like the rays of the sun. They wash over you and make you feel cleaner than water.
Thank you.
Another composition by Melissa Dunphy, which will be on tomorrow night's concert, It's Strange About Stars, in this case sung by the Piedmont East Bay Children's Choir, and with that text by Lola Ridge. Spending time with the conductor for the concert, one of the two conductors for the concert, Timothy Westerhouse, and certainly the composer, Melissa Dunphy. And now we're just going to kind of go into another one of the interesting, relevant topics that Melissa, you've taken up in your composition.
Yeah, I was approached by a community chorus in Philadelphia called Philharmonia a couple of years ago who wanted to write a piece about immigrants. Specifically, they were inspired by recipients of the DREAM Act, DACA, to write a piece of music that really humanized their experience. I immediately connected with this piece, with the topic, I should say, because my family, there's immigration in my family. Both of my parents were refugees, my mother from China, my father from Greece. They met in Australia. And then, of course, I immigrated to America on the infamous 90-day fiancé visa that has its own reality television show. But, you know, the stories of DREAM Act Americans are stories that I've been hearing in my family for my entire life. So, I found a whole movement called UndocuPoets, hashtag UndocuPoets on Twitter, where undocumented immigrants were writing poetry about their experience. And I read a lot of their comments and their poetry. And one of the things that I really appreciated was a lot of them said, "For those of you who want to support us, please don't portray us as victims, you know, one-dimensional victims that require saviors. You know, that's not who we are. We are Americans. We are people who've lived in America for most, if not practically all of our lives. And because of some bureaucratic red tape, we are now being told that we're not Americans and we need to leave in some cases, or we need to, you know, go through this very rigorous process in order to stay in the country, which is their home." And I really thought, you know, that's something that I need to take in, I need to portray in some way. So there's an amazing poet. Her name is Janine Joseph. She's based in Oklahoma. She was originally from the Philippines. When she was a small child, she was actually on a Kraft cheddar cheese commercial in the Philippines. And she still remembers the jingle that she sang. And she wrote a little poem called More Milk Makes It Better, which is about her sort of journey from the Philippines as a young child who was on a Kraft cheddar cheese commercial. Interesting point, in the Philippines, people don't drink milk the way we do here in America. You know, they have coconut milk, for instance, or powdered milk, but not the full cream dairy milk that we drink so much of here. Then she came to America and she was surrounded by this amazing dairy and she loved it so much, and you know the struggle for her was real, where you know you gain weight because you're surrounded by this incredible milk, and so this poem is this very funny, very lighthearted, I think, look at how milk and American milk has shaped in some ways her journey, the love relationship she has with American bounty.
Now, there's a circuitous story that's really wonderful. Thank you.
Right.
And so this is that piece by Melissa Dunphy. More milk makes it better.
Oh,
More Milk, More Milk Makes It Better was that piece created by Melissa Dunphy and sung in this case by the American, by
the singers.
The Singers.
The Singers, yeah. Okay, a group called The Singers. So we're coming down very much to the end of this, the concert, which is tomorrow night at 7:30 at the Myrtle Waldson Theater. And you've done a choir, you've had the choir in there before.
We have, yeah, and this is great. We get our combined choirs, Dies Cantus, directed by Amy Porter, the Glee Club, directed by my colleague Josh Schenk, and myself with the concert choir.
Good. And then certainly with the focus on Melissa's music. So we're going to go out with a little bit of what we opened with talking about, the Gonzales Cantata. So kind of the quick elevator speech reminder of the significance of the Gonzales Cantata in your life.
It is a Baroque cantata about the Senate Judiciary Committee hearings of former Attorney General Alberto Gonzales. And the moment we're going to hear is sort of the climax of the piece where Gonzales basically admits that he ought to be attacked for what he's done and is shouted down by the senators.
To leave it right there. We were almost at the end, but anyway, that was Attack Me from the Gonzales Cantata, the music of Melissa Dunphy. Again, that concert tomorrow night at the theater at Gonzaga.